This program has been brought to you by New York Cider Week. For more information, check out ciderweeknyc.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Fun Men About It.
All right. I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Mary Izette.
And we're your co-hosts on this journey through all things fermentable weekly nights at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
And archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and on the website HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Happy Cider Week. It's the end of Cider Week. It just concluded yesterday. It was a blast all week long. However, I spent most of it sick. So Mary has experienced it, and I lived it by proxy, miserable and at home, except for a couple events when I actually did have taste buds, and I enjoyed them thoroughly.
That's true. So I did actually get out there pretty much every day for Cider Week. I interviewed some great cider makers, which we're going to play throughout the show. But we're going to kind of go through this chronologically and give some shout outs, as well as props and all that stuff. So last Friday, so a week and a half ago, we started out at 61 Local, which is a wonderful bar in what neighborhood is that? Carroll Gardens?
Yeah.
Cobble Hill?
Boreham Hill.
Rachel
you.
Has the answer.
Ding.
For the Descendants, to celebrate the first anniversary of Descendants Cider, we're going to hear from Jaheel Maplestone in just a little bit. Saturday, we had an action-packed day of other things, including the National Beard and Mustache Championship, which was incredible if you get a chance to see it.
King's Theater on Flatbush, they spent $1 billion refurbishing this thing, and it's an old theater that was in play from 1929 to 1977. It's incredibly detailed and a beautiful theater. If you are in New York and have a chance to see anything there, it's fantastic. And
holy beards and mustaches. It's absolutely incredible. Just Google it if you're curious. Trust me, it will be worth the type strokes. So that night, we actually drank some cider at Owl Farm. We were celebrating our good friend Heather McReynolds' birthday. Heather is a brewer at Six Point, or she's manager of brewery operations, I believe, at this point. Sunday was the Lower East Cider Festival. I will say I was in a little rough shape from Saturday's activities, but I did take a stroll down. It was super cool. Steve Woods, who we had on last Monday of Farnham Hill Ciders and Poverty Lane, brought down a bunch of his apples. Jaheel Maplestone brought his grinder and press, and they actually pressed fresh apple juice on the street. There was nice crowds. There were lots of people in line for free samples of cider, as well as the flights at Wassail. So that was pretty cool. It was a gorgeous day. Monday we had the show. So those of you who listen know that we had Steve and Louisa from Poverty Lane and Farnham Hill Ciders. That was a lot of fun. We Ubered them back to Terst afterward, which is a killer bar in Greenpoint, where we met up with Eleanor from Eden. So it was just cool. Anthony from Rowan, that's probably one of the biggest cider importers, distributors in the country. And also a couple guys from Seattle that were in town for Cider Week. Tuesday, I headed to Wassail. Chris was down and out at that point. But Wassail is a cider bar. It's New York City's first and only cider bar at this point. It's really a great place. It's on Orchard Street in the Lower East Side, really easy to get to. They have a full menu, so full restaurant as well as bar. That night, they were doing a very cool workshop or seminar panel on starting your own cidery. That unfortunately sold out in like 3 days, so I missed out on that. But I did go have dinner at the bar. Their food is excellent. It's a vegetarian restaurant, but you would never know it. The food's absolutely amazing. And then Leif Sundstrom, it debuted his brand new label, Sundstrom Cider. So let's hear from Leif. All right, I am here in front of Wassail for Cider Week in New York City with Leif Sundstrom of the brand new Sundstrom Cider. And today is your New York City launch, or actually world launch, right?
Yeah, I guess you could say. What's the difference at this point? Today is the first official day of selling legally selling the Sundstrom cider, and Wassail being the first customer, which is apropos to awesome. The current week. So, yeah, they're, we're having a little launch party inside right now with the first of two bottlings that I'm releasing from 2014 vintage. The second one is yet to be released. Will come out in the spring. And people are also inside enjoying some still fermenting cider from 2015
awesome,
right now.
Which yeah. I look forward to trying when we go back in.
Yep.
So talk about the cider that you're releasing today.
So this is... let's start by saying that everything's very, very small production, building very slowly. 2015 will be a much larger production than 2014. But the 2014, there was two bottlings. This one is labeled under the name Columbia County. All the fruit came from Columbia County up in the Hudson Valley. It's two varieties only, 60% Northern Spy and 40% Newtown Pippin. Both, you know, old North American heirloom varieties. And it is of the two probably the lighter, more easy drinking example of cider, but still produced kind of with the aesthetics of trying to reach a more Venice style of cider with great length and vibrant acidity and that kind of thing. So everything that I produce is all method champenoise or bottle conditioned. There has been a mix of inoculations and spontaneous fermentations. As of now, 2015 is 100% spontaneous, which is great. But the 2014 that's being poured inside today is inoculated. No fining, no filtration, just gentle racking and cool, slow fermentations just because of where they were located and the ability of the cold winds drifting in from outside, et cetera. So, it's a cider that, again, like I said, is light but still has great acidity and a little bit of subtle tannin and Venice quality.
Yeah. Very nice carbonation as well. It's lovely. I was enjoying a glass inside.
Yeah.
So what got you into making cider, and how long have you been making cider?
I've been making cider now. This is going on the third year, so not a very long time. But I worked in the wine industry for a long time prior to that in various capacities, working for importers, distributors. Started in restaurants and ended in restaurants also. But in between, worked for a couple different wineries, one in Oregon and one in Germany. And not only from those winemakers that I worked with, but from winemakers that I worked with intimately in the importing side, learned a lot about different approaches to winemaking and whys and hows and even the technical aspects, especially when I was working directly in the winery. And that informed a lot of why and how I choose to make cider. So.
And why cider instead of wine, since you...
It's a complex answer, the one that I maybe changed my mind about a lot. But I think the basics there are that, you know, I had a pretty fortunate experience in the wine industry and got to experience a lot of the world's greatest wines and realized that while that was what I wanted to do as far as actually producing a beverage of that type and having a connection to the land by doing so and preserving it for ageability and years of reflection, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I was never going to be able to make a wine that I wanted to make in a place I wanted to live. Or the possibilities were more limited, let's say. And coupled with that kind of conundrum, was really excited by the possibilities of exploring cider, because I feel like the ceiling of possibility in cider is yet to be discovered. So, and there's also just a different kind of aspect of community around cider that was interesting to kind of delve into and explore. And quite honestly, even though I worked with very high-end wines and all that kind of stuff, there was something that fascinated me about the idea that cider... whether it was of extremely high quality or extremely low quality didn't matter to the public, that there was less of an intimidation factor around it, as there is unfortunately tied into the world of wine. So it was something that I could bring people around a hearth with a little bit more easily, so to speak. Yeah.
Cool. And what are your plans?
Well, to try and focus as much as I can on specific varieties. What those exactly are is yet to be determined, but meaning trying to produce blends that are of limited variation of variety. For example, the two from 2014 are two varieties each. It's a whole different story with 2015. But just to try and kind of focus on the specific individual characteristic there and see where that takes us and hopefully kind of help bring that into realm of focusing on terroir and cider in various aspects of areas of the Hudson Valley or the Finger Lakes or wherever it may take me. But I we'll see. Just great quality and good production, hopefully.
Awesome. Yeah. So if people want to get to try some of the Columbia County that's out now, obviously they can come to Wassail.
Yeah.
And where else is it available?
Wassail, when Rouge Tomat opens soon, I believe in January, it'll be by the glass there. As far as retail outlets go, I don't know yet. There's a couple. There's Cellar d'Or in Ithaca, which is something any cider lovers should know about because they have maybe the greatest selection of cider of any retail store in the country, maybe. Cellar d'Or, Ithaca, New York. Hudson Wine Merchant in Hudson, New York will likely have some on the shelves given they're great friends and neighbors. But honestly, beyond that, it's a matter of figuring out what limited number of bottles I have left and where they will go.
Right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And I look forward to trying your next bottle.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
All right. All right. All right.
All right. So we're sticking with Tuesday. I'm still at Wassail, and I finally got a chance to hang out with Jahiel Maplestone of Descendant Cider. All right, I'm celebrating Cider Week at Wassail, which is an absolutely wonderful cider bar on Orchard Street in the Lower East Side in New York City. I'm here with Jahiel Maplestone of Descendant Cidery. Hi, Jahiel.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. So you are New York City's only cidery. You're an urban cidery. And you just celebrated your first anniversary on Friday. So congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, we had a big party on Friday night and got the whole city over there to celebrate the first year of business.
Awesome. We were there. It was a lot of fun, and your ciders are wonderful. So talk about how long have you been making cider? I guess we'll start there.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I've been making it for sort of the past sort of 5 to 8 years properly. And it just accelerated through that time, the amount I was making. You know, like it's like any homebrew habit, it just gets out of control. And then we sort of started the company about 2.5-3 years ago. You know, we spent a year and a half sort of getting them together, doing the licensing, all that kind of thing. And then, now we've had a year of actual commercial production.
Awesome. So you have 3 ciders currently out there, is that correct?
I think so. We've just released our 10th one, apparently. But so it's sort of
that's
a weird.
True, because you've done some small batches.
It's sort of weird to know what. And the thing is, so we have 2 year-round like permanent things that never run out. Then we have sort of a limited reserve series, which are more like vintage, harvest-based. We do a single harvest ferment that's aged, you know, it's ready when it's ready kind of cider. And they're our limited reserve. So they're a vintage thing that we only ever make one of a year. And then there's other sort of, random collaborations. We have a thing called the hop experiment that we do where we just, trial different hops in different blends and things like that. So I think today now there's about 10 different ones we've done. But I think we have four currently on the market. And it sort of varies between about 4 or 5.
Awesome. Yeah. So let's talk about your 2 mainstays. So you have a dry. Yeah.
Year round. Yeah, the 2 year rounds are Succession and Pom Pom. Mm-hmm. So Succession is our more draft style, semi dry. It's the sort of the everyday drinker. The design of that was just to be one that was on tap. You can drink pint after pint. It's lower alcohol, 5.5%, and it's balanced with semi sweetness means that it's not too. Not too cloying. It's the acid's not gonna sort of ruin your palate, but not too sweet that you get sort of that sickly sweetness you get from a lot of ciders. And then the other year round is Pom Pom, which is the pomegranate hibiscus.
And what inspired pomegranate hibiscus?
So that was like all our ciders. Everything we do in cider it's all about purpose. So we're not just sort of flavoring a cider or something. It's how we can make an interesting cider that if we add something to it, it's like what does that add? What's the complement? So we work with a lot of dessert variety apples, which are very high acid. And so the sort of goal was how do we make a nice balanced cider with those apples without making it a sweet cider, because the sweetness that's in a lot of those ciders is there to balance that acid. So the other sort of tool you have is tannin. So I was sort of looking at different fruits that have high levels of tannin in them, and pomegranate is sort of the perfect fruit. I also wanted to make a rosé sort of style cider, so it was sort of perfect. So we sort of messed around with different blends until we found the right sort of balance that made a really nice drink. The only thing is I don't really like the smell of pomegranate, so we added hibiscus as well. So we did like a distilled hibiscus water that we add, and that gives it a sort of a nicer aroma. But we distill it so we don't get the colour, because if you add hibiscus, it goes blood red and you can't see through it. So we got the nice rosé from the pomegranate, we got the nice smell from the hibiscus, and then we got the great apple sort of base from the acidic apples we use.
Awesome. Yeah. And you're doing bottling and draft ciders.
Yeah.
Is that true for all of your releases?
Pretty much. So we do... we do draft for the Succession, the Pom Pom. So with things like our limited reserve, I'll just sort of guesstimate a number of kegs, and we'll do that because we obviously bottle and package all, only once a year. So we'll just set aside a certain amount. That's kegs. And they last as long as they last. So the dry kegs have actually already sold out for the year.
And dry is your most recent?
That's our most recent. That was the first limited reserve that we brought out.
Okay.
And then we've just launched our pear, which is our apple perry aged in whiskey barrels. And that we sold it. That basically launched at the start of Cider Week, and all the kegs are gone already for that.
Congratulations.
Yeah, cheers. It's just good. We didn't do that many, so it wasn't a huge sale, but we thought that was better in a bottle anyway. It's a lot higher alcohol. You know, it's sort of a winter warmer kind of thing, so we thought that goes better in a bottle.
So where are you sourcing your apples from?
Lots of different places. So we've got one main farm that we're working with that started becoming the go-to for a lot of the apples we needed. And then I've got a bunch of small little sort of mum-and-pop things that I source things through. We've also got our own land, which has a bunch of old standard trees. And that's in the Upper Delaware Valley. And we've actually started a program up there with the area. It's a community source cider project. So we've got about 12 different properties, you know, people's homes, backyards, old lost orchards, things the idea was basically there's a lot of great apples up there. That area is a really rich apple history, and there's loads of apples there that basically were going to waste. So we started a project. We said, look, let's if you have apples and you want to use them, we'll start this thing, see who's got all the great apples that are good for cider. We've discovered all these great old lost orchards and interesting apple trees, and then we're sort of using them plus our own ones to make another sort of wild foraged lost orchard style cider.
Awesome. And yeah. Is that coming out soon?
Yeah, that's just it's actually fermenting at the moment. It's going to be fermenting for a little while, and then it'll sit there as long as it needs, and I don't think we'll see that until probably next summer or later. So
well, I look forward to
yeah.
it.
That one's, that's a really labor intensive cider. It's you know, I'm going up there on my own, picking them, filling the car, picking by hand, and it's a long, it's, you know, it's a really great way to do it. I love being out there in the trees and that kind of thing, but it's a lot of work. I'm bringing those apples in, pressing them, got to get rid of the pomace here in the city, and a lot of work, but it's hopefully going to be good.
Yeah. And then you have your first cask cider.
Yeah, we're doing that this Saturday at Jimmy's. He wants to do a whole bunch of cask ciders for part of Cider Week, so he asked us to do one with our pear. And luckily, we were just at the stage of packaging for that. So so we said, yeah, let's do one. And I really enjoy casks, so for me, I was sort of just waiting for the opportunity. And now that we've done one, we're sort of something I want to try and introduce more. And that's the beauty of what we're doing too, is because we're making these small batches and it's just whatever we want to do, you know, we're packaging in bottles, we're packaging in kegs, you know, casks, it's whatever we want to do. So, you know, each thing that I make, it's sort of like, oh, this would go really good in, you know, this kind of packaging, and that's what we'll try. And casks is something I'd love to sort of get across all of what we do. So.
And was the pear, and it's spelled P-A-I-R, correct?
That's right, yes. Pear is in like a pear of fruit, you know, right. the apple and the pear make a great pear.
Was that your first barrel-aged cider that you've done commercially?
Again, like a lot of the other things, I wanted to get into sort of barrel aging and barrel fermenting and lots of different things like that. And, you know, there's loads of great distilleries here in the city. So I'm friends with a couple of them, and I was sort of going around saying, oh, can we grab some of your barrels and try something out? And that was sort of the first step into getting some barrel awesome. Programs going. So.
And you used all New York City distilleries?
Yep. Very yeah, cool. all whiskey barrels for this one. And then... we'll try some other things as we go on.
And do you have any tips for home cider makers that are interested in doing some barrel-aged cider?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I just approach it from a microbiological sort of position to start with. Like, where's this barrel coming from? And distilleries are good because if they're single-use whiskey barrels, there's a fair chance there's nothing growing in it. And I was getting them fresh dumped from the distillery. So the day they were pulling it out into their blending tanks, I'd come and get the barrel still wet straight from them. So there was no concern, really, for anything bad. So I mean, that was for me, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't going to be getting a tainted barrel, but after that I just filled it up, and then it's just a matter of keeping a corny keg next to it with the top up cider, and just keeping an eye on it and monitoring the headspace and tasting it often to see when it's ready.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, great, thank you so much, congratulations again. And if people want to find your cider, how did they go about that? So you're in New York City only?
Yeah, at the moment we're only in, well, in the five boroughs, but really only in Queens, Brooklyn, and Manhattan. And we're in most places you can find sort of good craft beer. You know, lots of the sort of cheese charcuterie stores, things like that. Lots of good craft beer bars. And yeah, if any don't have it, let us know. But yeah, it should be too hard to find. Or they can contact us through, if they go to our website, info@descendant.com, that comes straight to us and we'll tell them where to go.
And what's the website?
Descendantcider.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much and congratulations again.
Thanks very much.
Cheers.
We're going to take a really quick break. Thanks for listening to Ferment About It.
Cider Week helps to bring profitability to local orchards while reviving heirloom apple varieties by cultivating awareness of craft cider. Cider Week connects cider makers from New York State and select pioneering guest cideries outside the state to buyers from top restaurants, bars, and retail shops across New York City. Those culinary tastemakers, in turn, help increase consumer awareness of cider's pleasures by hosting public events, tastings, dinners, classes, and pairings that build appreciation and demand for regional ciders.
Hey, hey, hey. All right, all right, all right. Welcome back to our Cider Week New York City recap on Ferment About It.
All right, so we left off. I was at Wassail on Tuesday. I got to give a huge shout out to Wassail because New York City's first and only cider bar. It's absolutely wonderful, and they did a ton of programming for Cider Week. They had all kinds, you know, from cider debuts to killer draft and bottle list of ciders to workshops, cider chats, all kinds of stuff. So
that's not to say it's the only place that does great cider in New York City. Like Owl Farm has long had a really strong, strong cider list. There are a couple other places in the city, and it's really neat to see cider coming up in the city.
I agree. Although I do recommend that if you are interested in cider and you want to learn more, cider bars are a great way to do it. So
yes,
not only is Wassail, but we've also been to Bushwhacker Cider in Portland, Oregon. And then we were hanging out with one of the guys from Capital Cider in Seattle. We haven't made it to that one yet. Another cider bar is Upcider in San Francisco. So if you live in a city or you're visiting a city that has a cider bar and you want to learn more, that's a great opportunity to do so. Wassail, for instance, has flights all the time. So anyway, big shout out to them. All right, so Wednesday I headed to another place that had a lot of really good cider programming, Jimmy's Number 43. Jimmy Carboni is the host of Beer Sessions Radio here on Heritage Radio Network.
Tuesdays at 5.
And they had a special cask from Eden Ice Ciders. So I talked to their head cider maker, David. All right, so I'm here at Jimmy's Number 43 celebrating New York City Cider Week with David Bion. You're the head cider maker for Eden Specialty Ciders in Vermont.
Yep.
So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
So tell me a little bit, how'd you get involved in fermenting cider?
Well, I got involved first by basically drinking cider and liking it. That's what I think is how a lot of people get started in the industry, is they start drinking it and they decide they love it and they just have to make it. So I started out drinking cider and making cider at home, and I did a viticulture and enology program at Colorado State University. After that, I kind of tried to make my way through the wine industry. I was a vineyard manager and assistant winemaker in the Finger Lakes. And then a job opened up as a cider maker, and had to, you know, throw my hat in on that one and just go at it, and just been doing cider making ever since. I've been making cider at home for about 6 years and professionally for about 3.
So what was the transition from winemaking to cider making like for you?
It's pretty easy, actually. There's such an overlap in the techniques that the very basics are very similar. There was a bit of a learning curve in terms of like fruit selection and orchard care and tasting apples, because I'd gotten used to going to vineyards and tasting fruit and, you know, tasting grapes specifically to try and figure out when the grapes were going to be good for wine. So I was pretty well versed in that, but it's been definitely been a learning process doing the same thing with apples.
And you guys make iced cider, which is pretty unique in the cider world.
Yeah, it's pretty
new,
too.
And you guys are one of the few in the U.S. that make iced ciders, and they're absolutely delicious.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about what is iced cider, and how do you guys make it? I know there's a few different approaches.
So the way we make iced cider, and this is the most common way, unfortunately, you can't leave the fruit on the tree very easily. It just basically drops off when it's ripe. So we pull the fruit off when it's ripe, and then we put it in storage until late December when it's pretty cold outside. It's already pretty snowy. And we press and juice the fruit then, and then we put the juice directly outside to freeze. And it freezes to a big solid block. It takes about 8 weeks for it to freeze. And when you bring it in, the sugar melts first and the water stays frozen. So what you get off of the freezing process is a really concentrated apple sugar solution. And that's what we use as the base for the iced ciders.
So is that how you guys separate it? Is that you just take off what melts first?
Yes.
So do you have different, like, runnings?
We do, actually. We have three different runnings. And part of the reason we have three different runnings is it's a very high loss procedure. We buy 28,000 gallons of juice a year, but we actually only get about 8,000 gallons of fermentable product out of it. So it's a pretty costly and time-consuming endeavor. So we do three runs. So basically, we'll bring the juice in, we'll let it melt, and all the stuff we get off the first run, we use for iced cider. And then we put it back outside to freeze again, and then we bring it back in and let it melt again. Now, the stuff we get off that second time isn't quite as high as sugar, so we can't make iced cider out of it. So the second run is what we make our Orleans out of. That's our aperitif ciders. We have the herbal and the bitter. So that's, you know, pretty high alcohol. There's pretty good sugar to start, but it's not as high as iced cider. We can't make iced cider out of it, so that's why we make the Orleans. And then we do it again. We put it back outside to freeze, bring it back in, and that third run, which is our last run, is what we use for a sparkling cider base.
Awesome. And I had the Imperial 11, which I
believe is third. Yeah.
Awesome. Yep. So tonight you brought a very special cider with you called Predicament Number 1.
Yep.
And it is your first cask cider.
Yeah, this is the first in a series, hopefully. This is something I put together specifically for Jimmy's. I wanted to make something a little bit special. So I kind of tried to find like a balance between some of the more interesting fruits that we have. Started off with the Kingston Black, which is the English bitter shark. You know, it's kind of the golden child of the cider industry right now. Yeah, it's kind of like the holy grail. So I said it's about 20% Kingston Black. And then it's about 60% heirloom and bittersweets. So you're going to get a little bit of Mackin Empire, some Ashmead's Kernel, Spitzenbergs. You get some Dabinet and Yarlington Mill in there. And that kind of fleshes out a little bit more of that earthy tone. And then I added 20% of fresh fermentation of Kerr Crabapple, which is a really tart, really kind of bracing acidity. So that kind of brought out the high note, and then to condition it, I used some of the apple from our honey from the hives in our orchard.
Yeah. So for anybody that is either a home cider maker or a professional cider maker, do you have some tips for cask conditioning with cider? Is it any different than, you know, beer?
You know, it is in that you really have to pick a cider blend that is going to taste good dry, obviously. The process of cask conditioning is going to eat up all the sugar in a product, so if the cider tastes good with a little bit of residual sugar in it, you're not going to be able to cask it very well. So it's definitely better to pick more interesting fruit, a little more cider-specific varieties, because when they go dry, they have, you know, a little more of that phenolic and earthy quality. There's a little bit more going on there when they're dry, so that's probably the number one concern for cask conditioning is that you want to pick fruit that's going to be interesting when it's dry.
Well, this is delicious, so thank you so much. It was so nice to meet you, and happy Cider Week.
Thank you, you too.
All right, we're back. So that was Tuesday, that was Wednesday night. All right, Thursday, I headed to a brand new bar in New York City, only 6 weeks old. It's called Haymaker.
Haymaker
or Haymarket? Haymaker?
Oh, man. my
dude, dude, I think I wrote this down wrong. We'll look it up. Don't worry.
You're going to say it in a second.
I know. Anyway, it's great. They're on...
that's true.
It's on 8th and around 29th Street. So they have a full list of craft. They had a lot of special ciders on that particular night from Millstone. And I talked to their cider maker.
Kyle Scherer.
All right, I'm here at the new Haymaker Bar and Kitchen in Chelsea, and with Kyle Scherer from Millstone Cellar Ciders. How's
it going? Hey, how's it going?
So I'm tasting through a flight of your ciders, and you brought a sizer, which is a part of a new series?
It's something we've been making for a while now, but we definitely approach sizers in a much different fashion than almost anyone out in the market. Sizers for us is pretty...
Just for some people that might not know.
Absolutely. A sizer is pretty much a love child between cider and mead. The way we make them is generally ferment and age the cider for about 6 months in oak. And then we will add 3 gallons of honey per barrel of cider, either utilizing clover honey from Maryland or blueberry honey from New Jersey, depending on the style we're trying to achieve. When you add the honey to the cider, it completely changes the chemistry of what you're producing. It'll go from about like a 3.7 pH all the way down to 3.3 in about a month's time. We then let it age for another 4 to 6 months. And along that process, it's going to be allowing that extra sugar source coming in will allow not only the bacteria to work off of it, but then sometimes some of the Brett will work off it as well and give it some really funky, very sour beer-esque flavor profiles. It'll also bring up the ABV, so they're all generally around 10%. And then we almost always utilize a lot of fruit with those. So we do a lot of skin contact fermentations with all of our fruit, generally macerating the fruit, be it cherries, plums, strawberries, fermenting on the skins with all the native yeast for about a week, week and a half, and then press it off into juice and put it in barrels from a month and all the way up to a year before then blending it with the cider. So we always keep the juice separate from the cider or sizer and then blend it after the aging process. So that way we have total control over the final blend and flavor profile. The bonfire is what we have here tonight. It is one of our weirder ones. It is a fish pepper sizer. And for those of you who don't know what fish peppers are, it's a Baltimore native pepper. Came over on the slave trade, supposedly, and was used along the Chesapeake Bay in the fish houses as a hot paprika substitute. It's an earthy, slightly fruity pepper with about the heat of a jalapeno, so you're not going to overdo it the way you would with the habanero. So when we get these peppers in, we do 50% of them fresh and age it for about 2 weeks in the barrel along with the sizer. The other 50% we smoke with cherry wood and age it for 2 weeks as well, and then bottle it up. And it's really green peppery on the nose. Has heat, a little bit of wood smoke in the flavor profile, lots of tartness, but the heat's not overpowering, and it's a really cool, kind of interesting flavor profile.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So how did you get into cider? How long have you been making cider?
So I've been making cider for about 4 years. Me and my father started the company. He came from a winemaking background, went to UC Davis for viticulture and winemaking. We decided to approach it very much like natural wine to begin with, but as we discovered more and more about cider, we really just started focusing on the intricacies and processes and old world ways of making cider. And every year we learn more and more. We don't sulfite any of our stuff. We don't pasteurize. We don't back sweeten or filter. It's all wild yeast fermented or influenced in oak barrels and then aged for about 6 to 8 months surly, which is on top of the lees or all of the pectin and dead yeast that fall out, which helps encourage a native malolactic fermentation, which changes the yeast from harsh malic acid, which is always present in apples, to a softer lactic acid. It rounds out the mouthfeel and makes the dryness a little more palatable. We also ferment all of the apple varietals separately. We have about 14 different apple varietals. We work with generally all heirloom varietals. And then we blend the different apple varietals after aging. Once again, controlling the final process and what each of the styles of cider are. And we're working with other ingredients. It's all about pairing those apple varietals with those flavors that you're working with. So between our Mainland's Farm Gate, Hop Pot, and Ginger, each one is paired with a different blending and idea of what the apple and final flavor profile should be.
And where are you guys located?
So we're in Moncton, Maryland, about 30 minutes north of Baltimore City. Started an old 18th century grist mill. Now we also have a barrel aging warehouse for about 500 oak barrels that we do all of our aging in.
And so we're lucky that we get you in New York. What other areas of the country are you available in right now?
Absolutely. So we're obviously out of our home state, Maryland, D.C., Delaware, Virginia, New York, as you mentioned. And then we have some West Coast expansion. We're also in Washington State and California.
that's definitely something to look out for. I think your ciders are really interesting and but yet very drinkable, and I applaud what you guys are doing. So thank you so much for talking to me.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. Dude, Kyle, they're... I learned so much this week and drank so many... So much cider and so many varieties of cider. It was an absolutely amazing experience. So after I reluctantly left Haymaker and Kyle from Millstone, but our good friend Eli Kyer was at Birreria at Italy pouring some of his ciders and kombucha cider creations. If you want to hear more about Eli, you can check out episode 118 where we interviewed him. Friday night, Kuzme had rallied and we went to an absolutely amazing dinner at Trestle on 10th, which is a fantastic restaurant in Chelsea. Farnham Hill and Eden, plus a bunch of other cider makers, the food cider. It was good times and good eats all the way around. Saturday, I gotta say, I wimped out. I skipped out. I was tired. I stayed home. I did have a cider that night. We went to see Norm Macdonald at Caroline's on Broadway, which was very entertaining, and I had an Angry Orchard cider. It was only cider on the menu. I did the best I could.
But you stuck to the theme. You stuck to the week's theme.
That's right.
I was proud of you.
And then Sunday, I was at Beer Street. Kuzme's been bartending at Beer Street on Sundays, so I rolled into Beer Street. That's a great... Not just because Kuzme bartends there, but it is an absolutely fantastic craft beer bar. No, that's not true. I've been there when you haven't been there.
Well, we started anyway, on that side of the bar.
Andy Brennan from Aaron Burr Cider was doing a special tasting, and we got to taste that super rare. What's it called? It's on my Untappd feed.
Malacca Burrata.
Yes, and as well as some other ones. So anyway, I rounded out my cider week right there. Big shout out to all the bars and cideries that participated. I'm still drinking cider. I'm drinking Millstone's Hop Vine right here. It was at the back bar at Roberta's Pizza, where our studio is out of. Anyway, thanks to everybody Cider Week that participated in Cider Week, and especially the people that put it on. It was absolutely amazing. If you're into cider, I think it's definitely worth coming out.
It was its fifth year, and we look forward to many more of them.
Absolutely. All right, thank you to our sponsor, Cider Week.
Cider Week NYC.
Thanks to our engineer, Liz, our co-producer,
Smith.
Rachel.
Rachel Jacobs.
And everyone else.
At the Heritage Radio Network. And to you, the listeners, especially for donating and to heritageradionetwork.org. If you like what you've heard, please go to heritageradionetwork.org and become a member.
It's, click on the red heart in the upper right-hand corner.
Thank you very much. Feel mad about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.